From WYPR, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. The nonprofit Civil Justice believes every citizen deserves his or her day in court. That's why they line up legal counsel to represent people with low or moderate incomes in non-criminal cases. Executive Director Eden Forsyth sees a direct connection between fair representation in court and restoring faith in democracy and civic engagement.
What's the point of voting? What's the point of doing public service for a system that has never been on your side when you needed it? Hopefully, civil justice can be a part of helping people see the value in the legal system and have a good experience with it.
Plus, we meet a civil justice lawyer and her winning client. It's On the Record after the news.
You're listening to On the Record, the podcast, a service of your public radio, 88.1 WYPR. Find more podcasts online at wypr.org. And tell us what you think. Send an email to ontherecord@wypr.org.
Good morning, I'm Sheila Cast. We're on the record. To enlist legal services or counsel, attorney fees can range from about $200 to more than $600 an hour. For the average person suddenly in need of legal counsel, those fees could translate into an insurmountable mountain of debt. That's why for more than two decades, the nonprofit Civil Justice has provided legal services for a growing segment of the population, those with low or moderate incomes. Later in the show, we'll hear from a lawyer and her client about what it took to correct an illegal garnishing of thousands of dollars of wages. Joining us now is the executive director of Civil Justice, Eden Forsyth. She came to the nonprofit after working as a senior legislative counsel in the U.S. House of Representatives, where she oversaw a wide range of policy issues pertaining to the working poor, including sentencing reform, consumer protection, and housing. Welcome to On the Record, Eden.
Thank you for having me here.
Tell me about civil justice. How did it start?
Sure. So civil justice actually got started by a couple of law professors at the University of Maryland. And it came about as the idea that there's this gap in needing legal services, especially in certain types of consumer cases. And it also came about, I think, as part of the realization that in some types of cases, the line between private practice and public interest law is often the same line. So that when an attorney takes on a case in some types of cases, they're doing a lot of good for that person, for their client, but also at the same time doing a lot of good for the community by challenging abusive practices. So that's the idea behind civil justice about 25 years ago from the school.
So whom does civil justice serve? What are the requirements for people or the cases you'll take?
Yeah, so as you mentioned earlier, our typical clients are people that are low-wage earners or low or moderate-wage earners. Most of our clients have full-time jobs or part-time jobs, but they have some income, but not enough to hire a private attorney. But usually, they don't qualify for the legal services that's out there for free. Well, there are a number of reasons why that might be. One reason is because they make too much money for the qualification. So in Maryland, that is usually 50% of the median income. So a family of two today, that works out to be, I think, about $37,900. And for a family of four, I think that's somewhere around $56,000.
So other legal services like legal aid?
Like legal aid.
You need to be at below
you need to
that
level. At or below that level.
And that's not true of civil justice?
Right. We service a population that make above that level. So one of the reasons they come to civil justice is because they don't qualify. They cannot get legal services for free. And one of the main reasons that happens is because of income. And then there are other types of reasons as well. For example, they may have a kind of case that other types of legal service organizations cannot take on. It's either because it's not a right fit for their organization, or it's because there are some fee-shifting issues that other legal service organizations cannot accept cases.
Fee-shifting.
Fee-shifting is the situation where the wrongdoer in the end pays for the attorney's fees at the end of the process. And in doing so, it allows consumers to have an attorney without cost up front.
How many clients on average?
So we're a small organization. I can say that we take about 5,000 phone calls a year. And of that number, we take a small number of those cases in-house, and then we refer the vast number of cases to our network of lawyers. So it varies from year to year, but 5,000 phone calls is roughly what we get each year.
And how is civil justice paid for?
Oh, gosh. A combination of programs that's funded by the states and foundations and attorneys' fees in some of the cases that settle, and of course, private donations. It's a combination of different sources.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with Eden Forsyth, executive director of the nonprofit Civil Justice, which provides legal services to clients with low and moderate incomes. In 2016, Forsyth was nominated by her peers for the Best Under 40 Award by the Washington, D.C. chapter of the Asian Pacific American Bar Association. So what type of cases?
So our typical cases are every type of consumer cases. So what that means are we have landlord-tenant cases, car repossession cases, debt collection cases, housing cases. We recently started a family law project, which is something we haven't done before. And we started doing that after realizing just the enormous need in that area. I think currently something like 80% of the cases filed in family courts where one party does not have an attorney to represent them. So this project got started about a couple of years ago, where a group of lawyers started talking about what to do about that enormous need in family law. And we recently started this project where the goal is to help people that have some ability to pay for legal services in family law and match that resource to the attorney who can help them. It's almost like this matchmaking process, really, where we match the legal need to a lawyer given the amount of resources that is available. I mean, we'll see how it goes. It's a brand new project. We started it about, I want to say, a month ago, and I have a lot of faith in the project, and I know the need is out there. It's just a matter of if we can figure out the process and do the matching correctly. But I'm very excited about it, as you can tell, because the need is enormous.
What is the difference between a client who works with civil justice and one who works with legal aid, Maryland Legal Aid?
Oh, I think we have a lot of overlap, for sure. But I think a big part of it is income. So people that do not qualify for legal aid because of income certainly can come to civil justice. I think another difference potential is the type of cases. Civil justice takes a lot of consumer types of cases.
And some people might be listening to this and think, well, wait, I thought I had a right to an attorney, which comes from the Supreme Court ruling in 1963, more than a half century ago, Gideon v. Wainwright. What do they need to understand about why you exist?
So in criminal cases in the United States, people are in fact entitled to an attorney. But a lot of these, most of the cases we do, and certainly civil justice, the cases civil justice works on primarily, are civil cases. You're certainly not entitled to an attorney in a civil case. And that's one of the reasons why Legal Aid and many of the other organizations in the legal services community do a wonderful job to help close that gap in access to justice. And civil justice is a part of that community.
You are newly at the helm of civil justice since August 2018. What are your big dreams for the organization?
My goodness. I certainly care, you know, about the cause. When I think about, you know, why take on this job, I think a big part of it is I believe deeply that legal representation is an important tool to help people get out of the cycle of poverty and get on with their lives. But beyond the person, beyond, you know, helping a single person and helping them getting out of the cycle of poverty, it's also a bigger issue of what it means for our system. You know, on a larger scale, I think having legal representation is a critical part of how a democracy works. And what I mean by that is, you know, for a system like ours to work, people have to have trust in it, they have to participate in it, they have to believe in it. And that And that trust and participation comes from repeated course of dealing and being a part of handling and going back and forth with the system. What I worry is that the way things are, you have this entire segment of the population who doesn't really see the benefit or the value of our system. And then if that's the case, it's really hard to ask people to be engaged in civic participation. You know, what's the point of voting? What's the point of volunteering? What's the point of doing public service for a system that has never been on your side when you needed it or for people you care about? And that, of course, you know, goes without saying, has implications for a system like ours, and that just cannot be the way going forward. So hopefully civil justice can be a part of helping people see the value in the legal system and have a good experience with it and be a part of shortening the justice gap.
It's a lot to think about. Thank you very much. Thanks.
Thank you so much for having me.
Eden Forsyth is executive director of the nonprofit Civil Justice. It provides legal services to clients of low or moderate incomes through a network of low-fee lawyers. I'm Sheila Cass. This is On the Record. Quick break now, and then we'll meet a lawyer and her client to hear about their experience. Stay with us.
This is the On the Record podcast, a service of Your Public Radio, member-supported 88.1 WYPR. You can support this podcast and everything you hear from WYPR. Become a member. Come to WYPR.org and click the donate link.
Welcome back to On the Record. I'm Sheila Cass. We're talking today about the nonprofit Civil Justice. It provides legal counsel to people with low and moderate incomes, those who wouldn't qualify for pro bono legal assistance. We've heard earlier from Executive Director Eden Forsyth. Joining us now is attorney Chelsea Ortega from the law firm Santoni, Vacci & Ortega. She devotes some of her time to work with civil justice. Welcome, Chelsea.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Also in studio is Renee Spencer, one of Chelsea's clients. 10 years after Renee completed payment of a debt of nearly $3,000, the landlord sold that debt to a judgment company, which began to garnish her wages for a second time. She's here to talk about the outcome. Welcome, Renee.
Thank you for having me.
Renee, what led you to first discover civil justice?
Well, I had went to the courthouse to file to have them stop my garnishments, and they wouldn't stop my garnishments. And I had been there two or three times and not getting a chance to present my case in court. I was talking to the young lady there, and she suggested that I go to the self-help center that was upstairs in the courthouse.
That you were talking to the young lady in the clerk's office?
Yes, ma'am. And she told me about the self-help office that was upstairs. So I went up there, and I was talking to a gentleman about my case, and he said that he couldn't help me, but he wanted to go get his supervisor so they could listen to my case. And once they listened to it, they told me it was beyond their scope, but they had a group called Civil Justice that would be able to probably help me. They couldn't guarantee, but my case seemed like a good fit for their organization.
So give me the short version of what happened, what you can talk about, what happened to you.
The short version was I had a garnishment that was approximately around $2,700. And it was garnished. I went to court, and it was paid off through a garnishment. And here we are maybe 8 or 10 years down the road. I get a letter telling me that I need to pay this bill again. And I contacted the company and told them that the bill had been paid because I had already been garnished. So I thought that was the end of it. And I didn't have an income because I wasn't working. So when I went back to work, I think I had been back maybe a month, and my check was being garnished in this company. And I called them again and explained, but they didn't listen. So I figured I'd go to the courthouse, show my paperwork, and have the garnishment stop. But it wasn't that easy. So they wind up taking a considerable amount of money from me, almost three times what I paid. and which was money they didn't have a right to have because it had already been paid years ago.
Chelsea, at what point did you get involved in this case?
So the Self-Help Center actually posted Ms. Spencer's case on a website called Justice Referrals, which is hosted by and was created by Civil Justice in order to help people get to private attorneys quicker. So I was able to see all of Ms. Spencer's documents and get a short summary of her story. And when I saw everything, I could tell that it looked like Ms. Spencer had, in fact, paid a judgment more than 10 years ago, and that another company had now bought the judgment, that it was improperly assigned to this other company, judgment buying company. And so I met with Ms. Spencer and took on her case.
And then what happened?
We filed suit, we are still in litigation now.
No, nothing's happened?
So there has been a settlement with one of the defendants, which was the judgment buying company. But the case is actually ongoing against the original creditor, the landlord, who assigned her judgment improperly.
Chelsea, why do you think an organization like Civil Justice is important?
Well, Eden talked a little bit about the gap that exists for people who need legal representation in civil cases. And we see that there is a significant gap. Our practice actually helps. That's really our business model, is we help people who are otherwise unable to afford an attorney by taking cases where we think that we can get our attorney's fees paid by the defendant. So what Eden talked about, these fee-shifting cases, which the legislature intended private attorneys to be able to take cases that may not involve a lot of money to a corporation, but they can be a significant amount of money to a private citizen, to a consumer like Ms. Spencer, who mentioned she had just gone back to work because she was a survivor of breast cancer. And so she didn't have the money to pay an attorney up front. Sometimes attorneys will even charge consultation fees before they'll even agree to take the case. And so she didn't have those resources to be able to pay a private attorney, and probably would not have been otherwise able to have an attorney if it weren't for the fact that these fee-shifting statutes exist.
This is On the Record on WIPR. I'm Sheila Cass speaking with attorney Chelsea Ortega and her client Renee Spencer about working with Civil Justice, a nonprofit that provides legal counsel for low and moderate income clients. Renee, what would you have done if you hadn't discovered Civil Justice?
I'd probably still be in court fighting to be heard, because I had went down there three different times, and three different times the case was turned down without anyone actually looking at the proof that I had gave, that it was actually paid, because I had paid the entire amount that they asked for. And this had went on maybe close to 6 or 7 months. I had paid the entire amount. And I started.
So let me just
linger
on that a minute. No, you said it clearly, but I want to make sure.
Yeah.
You had paid the debt a second time.
Yeah, I had not only paid the debt a second time, but I had paid it three times over for what they charged me, including interest. And the whole time, and the whole process after the first garnishment, I had been going to the courthouse trying to get them to stop it, to see my proof.
And you actually couldn't get in front of a judge, right?
No, I couldn't get in front of the judge. The judge said that the garnishment had not been paid. And I submitted written proof from my employer that it had been paid. And I think it was minus one payment. And they said, no, it hasn't been paid. So I got the last payment and submitted again, and still no. And then finally they said I could have my day in court. And I was like, okay, great, we're going to get this settled. Then I get a letter saying, oh, the case has been dismissed because your garnishment has been paid. Of course it's been paid. Y'all taken a significant amount of money from me for a second time. You know, and I was just truly frustrated. And to find out about Civil Justice, it was a blessing. Because, you know, I was at my wit's end. I was just going back to work after a 16-month illness. And, you know, I was at the end of my rope.
I can imagine. Chelsea Ortega, I realize the case is still pending. That may limit what you can say. But if it was apparent to you from looking at the papers in your first meeting with Renee Spencer, what does it say about the justice system that it's taken so long to get it actually settled?
So I think the first point is that for a pro se person or self-represented litigant, someone who doesn't have an attorney, the justice system can be almost impossible to navigate on their own. And they're often going against large corporations who almost always have attorneys. So it's the consumer on their own trying to fight a corporation that has an attorney. And so it can be almost impossible for them to properly represent themselves and navigate the system. And the second is that, unfortunately, the system just takes a long time. So even in a civil case, it can be a year or two before you actually go to trial.
What do you get out of, you yourself get out of working with civil justice?
So I think it's enormously satisfying to be able to meet with someone who is in an unfortunate position where they're being sued and not only go after the person who's suing them, but have that corporation pay my client and pay my fees. So the person who came to me initially is, you know, understandably frustrated, is scared about, you know, facing a garnishment or having their bank accounts garnished. And instead, the corporation ends up paying my client. My client doesn't end up paying them. And so that's a great feeling to be able to not only help someone get out of the situation, but to go after a corporation and change their practice, hopefully, so that others don't end up in the same situation.
Does it help or slow down the rest of your law practice to be involved in cases with civil justice?
So it helps. I mean, that's actually, those types of cases are most of our cases. We do individual cases like Ms. Spencer and as well as class actions against large property management companies, auto finance companies, to not only try to get the money back that people have maybe been overcharged, but to change this practice for thousands of other Marylanders. And so civil justice connects those clients, those people who are facing those issues with private firms like Santoni, Vacci, and Ortega and other firms across the state who do lots of different types of cases.
Is there a difference between a client working with civil justice and, say, Maryland Legal Aid?
There is a difference. So Maryland Legal Aid often will not pursue affirmative claims against a company, meaning Legal Aid probably would not have sued the company that garnished Ms. Spencer a second time and the landlord. And I think that's just a matter of what resources they have and their ability to do those types of cases.
So in other words, you will actually file a suit on behalf of a client, not just defend against a suit when they've been sued.
That's correct.
I understand that there is legislation before the General Assembly that might affect how wages are garnished in Maryland. Tell us about that.
That's correct. So in Maryland, there is currently a bill to increase the amount of wages that is will be protected from garnishment. So the
how does it work now?
So right now in Maryland, a creditor can garnish up to 25% of a person's wages. This bill would increase the amount that's protected. The law in Maryland has not changed in about 30 years on garnishments. And unfortunately, 32 other states have better laws than Maryland does to protect low to middle income workers. And so Maryland really needs to increase the amount that is protected because people need this money to buy groceries, to pay their rent, to pay their mortgage, to pay their auto loan. You know, and when someone is garnished, it can be a significant impact on those people, just like Ms. Spencer, you know, has experienced.
It was definitely an impact on me because when I went back to work, I wasn't working a full 40 hours. I was only working 4 to 6 hours a day, because I had to ease back into working. And then to be, you know, after not having an income for 16 months and to, you know, bills and everything falls behind because a major illness will substantially drain your savings. And for me to go back to work and try to build back up any type of savings and to have this garnishment, it was like a kick in the gut. It really was. And then for them to not listen to me when I called the company and told them that it was paid, you know, it was really disheartening that a company is allowed to do this.
Well, I'm grateful to you both for telling us about it. Good luck.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
A Attorney Chelsea Ortega from the law firm Santoni, Vacci & Ortega, and Renee Spencer, one of her clients. We're talking about working with Civil Justice, a nonprofit that provides legal counsel for low and moderate income clients. We have a link to more information about Civil Justice at the On the Record page at WYPR.org. I'm Sheila Cast. Happy you're with us on the record. Join us again tomorrow.
Thanks for listening to this segment of On the Record with Sheila Cast. You can catch the show on the radio Monday through Friday, 9:30 to 10 a.m. on 88.1 WYPR, your NPR news station. And you can support On the Record and all the other public radio programs that WYPR brings to you. Just click the donate link at the top of WYPR.org. And thanks.